The Columbia Workshop presents number 10 of 26 by Corwin.
Between Americans, an informal program for informal people, written and directed by Norman Corwin and featuring Ray Collins as the editorial we, with original music, including a special overture composed and conducted by Alexander Semler.
This program is Between Americans. That's where the title comes in. We hope you like it, but you don't have to. At any rate, nobody's going to make you stick around and listen to it. That's one of the advantages of being an American. We invite you to think that one over for a moment. And while you're exercising your inalienable right to tune us out or let us ride, we'll help ourselves to a 4-minute overture, especially written for this occasion, by Alexander Semler, and entitled The Columbia Workshop on a Quiet Night. It's in 3 movements. 1, opening announcement. 2, the 26 number 10 blues or the Japanese sound man. And 3, happy ending.
Thank you.
That overture by Alexander Semler was a highly American composition, even if the second movement had to do with a Japanese sound man, which it didn't. Naturally, of course, a little mixing of strain never bothered any real American. Not when we've got states named after French kings and English queens, or lifted right out of the Latin language like Montana, or out of the Spanish like Nevada. Now, you take Vermont. Vermont is the French for Green Mountain. There for green, mont for mountain. Simple as all that. They call it the Green Mountain State, don't they? It's a good thing there were some Indians around once to give us some original names, or we'd be in bad shape. You know, if we was to hold a convention of all the people who live in foreign-sounding American towns, we could fill quite a sizable stadium. Among the delegates registering on the first day would be...
Me, I'm the delegate from London, Minnesota.
I'm in from Dublin, New Hampshire.
Flew in this morning from Berlin, Oregon.
Oh, come on. Oh,
yeah. Oh who's sir, me?
Yeah. I'm from Rome, Mississippi.
I'm from Tokyo, Texas.
I came all the way from Shanghai, West Virginia.
Warsaw, Georgia.
I'm the delegate representing Moscow, Kentucky.
My town is Toronto, Kansas.
As for me, Lisbon, Maine.
Delegate from Madrid, Alabama, reporting.
I'm from Stockholm, South Dakota.
Drove down this afternoon from Bombay, New York.
Hitchhiked here from Baghdad, Florida.
All right, gentlemen. Now that you've registered, you may all be seated. Now, that's all the preliminaries is going to be tonight. We're through with the introductions, the overture, and the official registration, so now we can get down to the text, which is, roughly speaking, this. People are thinking about their country pretty hard these days. Some of them for the first time in their lives. People are wondering where we're headed. Men are being called on to get ready to defend America if need be. And a lot of them are thinking in terms of what there is to defend. Well, now America means a lot of things to a lot of people. Most Americans are solid patriots, only they don't know it. They don't have to wear a red, white, and blue button in their lapels to prove it. They don't have to fall on their faces every time they hear a popular patriotic tune. They don't need nobody to prod them in the back with a bayonet so they'll take their hats off when the flag goes by. They don't have to agree with or even listen to people like this.
And I promise to fort and dance for the Melnick and Devon the Cratons for the betterment of the voters. I'll repair in the open to mortify the Sansky partisan. The Sanders Quartier de Malvity to satisfy the mortal, and my opponent is a crook. We'll identify the House Lee and Rare in the portable Thanesway. Affect the barrier charge of the...
We've got a good hunch. Game. Most people prefer the quiet kind of speaker, like the fellow who got up on a platform in a Pennsylvania town one day and said,
"The world will little note, no long remember, what we say here."
That was the Gettysburg Address he was referring to. And as a matter of fact, he didn't get such good reviews the next morning. Take, for example, the write-up he got in the Harrisburg Patriot.
"We pass over the silly remarks of the president. For the credit of the nation, we're willing that they shall no more be repeated and thought of."
If you think that's bad, listen to what the Chicago Times had to say.
"The cheek of every American must tingle with shame as he reads the silly, flat, and dishwatery utterances of the man who has to be pointed out to intelligent foreigners as the President of the United States."
Of course, the rival paper in Chicago, the Tribune, took the opposite point of view. Rival papers often do.
"The remarks of President Lincoln will live among the annals of men. Send that along to the composing room."
The Trib gave it 4 stars, and they was right. The Gettysburg Address did survive. Now, that business of calling a president a ham is really something to be proud of. I mean, the right to print a piece saying a president makes a sound like dishwater. That's important. Nobody dragged the editors off to jail, even if they were wrong. Today, there's a terrific lot of opinion on the loose, and the poll makers are pursuing it at a gallop, you might say, and duck, comes under the heading of free press. As soon as anybody starts gagging the press, any press, watch out. Americans don't like that. And by the way, we got a nerve to be calling ourselves Americans all the time when we're really only United Staters. We're a little selfish about that. You know that a citizen of Punta Arenas on the Straits of Magellan has as much right to sing America the Beautiful as you have? Under the We Got a Technical Right clause in the interpretation of the word American, any Latin American could sing like this.
Beautiful for spacious skies and amber waves of green. For play mountain majesties above the fruited plain.
America down there in Chile, too, all the way down the spine of the Andes. And if any of you folks are hearing this down in Mexico or Honduras or Salvador or Argentina, or even if you're an Eskimo in the Arctic, we hope you'll overlook our calling ourselves Americans as though we were the only ones in the hemisphere. We do that just because it's so much easier to say than anything else. And also because it sounds so good. And by the way, before we leave the subject, what about the original Americans, the Indians? They're the only race which the scientists honor by the name of Homo Americanus. Not even George Washington and Tom Jefferson were Homo Americanuses. The only real Americans left today, if you want to get good and tough and anthropological about it, is a minority group. There's a forgotten race for you. Even the forgotten man has forgotten the forgotten race. How about the Indian on the nickel? The buffalo who roamed the back of the great American jit. Seems a shame. No two ways about it. We have forgotten them 100% Americans who went down to quarantine to meet the Mayflower. We don't see them around in person very much these days, but their ghosts are still with us. Between you and us and 26 by Corwin, it's said that near Boonesboro, Kentucky, on certain nights in November, by the light of the waning moon, some very peculiar ghost meetings go on in the woods south of the river. Also in certain parts of the Alleghenies, between the hours of sundown and the coming of the morning mists. Yes, and if you happen to be listening to this in a car driving along Highway 99 in Wyoming, that man you passed walking down the road a few miles back wasn't a man at all. They were a brave people, them Indians. Fought a losing fight against great odds. Wanted nothing more than to keep their land and their way of life. Fighting the fight so many people of all races have had to fight since. The fight to keep free and independent. The fight to stop men from the outside. Who want to civilize somebody else their way. Perhaps today the Indian looks down from a reasonably happy hunting ground and wonders. Wonders whether right here at home, among the people who took their place, there are any tribes still struggling to be free. Whether in any part of this tremendous inherited country, a man is any less a man because of his color or of his race. Have you ever asked yourself what America means to you? Does it mean 1776, Columbia, the gem of the ocean, big business, the Bill of Rights, Uncle Sam? Chances are it means none of these things. Chances are it means something very personal to each of you. Something close to your heart, which you'd miss like the very blazes if you were stranded abroad. It might have nothing at all to do with quotes from Madison or acts of Congress. It might be just the feeling about the crisp autumns in New England, the smell of burning leaves. Might be the memory of the way they smooth off the infield between the games of a doubleheader. It might be a thing as small as your little finger. Have you ever been abroad and run out of American cigarettes?
Hey, speak English, mister?
No, señor, solo hablo español.
Well, anyway, do you carry cigarettes?
Ah, cigarrillos, sí, tenemos bastante.
No, I just want cigarettes. I'll take these. How much?
Una peseta.
Keep the change. You got a light there, senor.
Oh, sí, como no, senor. Un momento.
Hey, what is this? Soft coal? Do it. Tastes like an old shoe. Yeah, you can smoke the rest of them.
There you are. America might mean a tight-packed cigarette, which tastes good. Might mean the way a hot dog man slaps mustard on a frank. What do you suppose America means to that auto repairman in the grease-caked dungarees who works in the garage on the corner of Willow and Elm Streets? It means, quite likely, crawling under that 1936 Buick and dragging an electric light bulb on a long extension after it.
Joe, hand me that wrench.
What wrench?
A wrench at your feet, right there.
Well, I don't see no wrench.
You're blind where you're looking. No, behind you.
Well, why don't you say so? Hey, Yon.
That's more like it.
Sure, that's America to Pete and Joe. Piston job, transmission job, valve job. Jack it up and change the tire. New fan belt. Check the pump. And on Saturday night, take the girl down to Joyland Dance Park. Means repairs to them boys and cans of oil and carburetor mixtures. And to Jack Prentice, who owns the Buick that Pete is fixing, and who lives down on the beach near the Coast Guard station. America means the sound and the sight and the smell of high tide under the full moon. With occasionally the melancholy note of the bellboy lifting up when the wind's blowing in from the ship channel. Means the age-old sound of the sea. The same sound folks are hearing this very moment up around Penobscot Bay and Winthrop Beach and Chincoteague Inlet down by Calaboke Sound and on Boca Chica and clean over to the other coast by Guadalupe and Carmel. Yep, wind and wave and sand and rock and riptide and undertow. That is America to Jack Prentice and the hundreds of thousands of folks settled on them coastlines between Eastport, Key West, Point Isabel, and Birch Bay. America is all things to all her people. Prairie to Nebraskans, coal to Scranton miners, cameras and raw celluloid to the picture boys in Hollywood, the stink of crude oil to the men who work the wells, relief checks to the unemployed, a mic and a stopwatch to a radio production man, a BMT express to Brooklyn office clerks. Sure, sure, that's the way it goes. Or isn't it? What does this country mean to you? Might mean anything, anything at all. Might mean a course in highfalutin poetry at Harvard.
Today, gentlemen, we will consider the influence of Whitman on the development of poetry in America. By 1870, after 12 years of incessant attack against squeamish over-refinements, Whitman really...
Or else it might be an argument between two baseball fans as to which is the better team, the Yankees or the Red Sox.
You're crazy. Yeah, yeah, but look. The Yanks are a bunch of old men and cripples.
Oh, sure.
They won't last, I tell you. They won't last.
They won't last.
No, wait till it gets good and hot around the middle of July. Wait till them doubleheaders begin piling up.
Ah, don't make me laugh, Eddie.
He's trying to
Listen,
make you laugh.
The match hit in 48 consecutive games for a new world's record. He's an old man, huh? Keller hit 19 homers. I like to be a cripple like that.
Oh,
no home run record for the club. Won't last, huh?
No, they won't.
Listen, who's the Red Sox got as good as the Madge? Name one guy.
I'll name two. Ted Williams.
All right, a good hitter. No getting away from that. But do you say that he's better than DiMaggio?
All right, how about the pitching?
Oh, wait a minute. One thing at a time. I'm talking
Cronin's
about DiMaggio.
Cronin's a smart
DiMaggio
guy here. You make me sick.
Or it could be a poker game in Charlie Farragher's law office upstairs over the 5 and 10 cent store on a rainy afternoon. Or a meeting at the Kiwanis Club in the Mansion House on Thursday. Or the news store on the corner. Or a great symphony concert sent out over everybody's air, playing the music of all the world's great composers, regardless of their race or nationality. For instance, something by a great German Jew named Mendelssohn. Something you couldn't play in certain countries on the other side. Now let's stop a minute and figure this out. Is it an accident that makes just being a citizen in this comparatively young country so attractive to so many people? To the world's greatest skater from Norway? To the world's greatest mathematician from Germany? To the world's greatest orchestra conductor from Italy? Is it an accident that 1,000,000,000 people all around the world would give everything they own to be in your shoes? A free citizen of this country, right this very minute? Well, why is that? Is it the weather here? Let's ask some of the natives. You from New York, how's the weather out your way?
Well, I like it all right, only the summers give me a pain, sticky and hot. And then we usually get a stretch of terrible overcast weather around April and November. Sometimes 10 days go by without the sun coming out once.
And you from Miami, Florida?
Climate's fine, except you have to watch out for hurricanes.
Gentleman from Kansas?
Well, summers get pretty hot and winters pretty cold. Tornadoes raise a ruckus every once in a while.
Los Angeles, you?
Oh, wonderful climate. Magnificent.
Don't you ever get tired of all that sunshine?
No, sir, not a bit.
Never rains?
Little precipitation, maybe, but no rain.
No earthquakes?
Well, just little ones. Say, are you interested in some real estate?
No, thanks. And you from San Francisco, how about it there?
Best climate in the world. Tops.
Lots of sunshine?
Lots.
Lots of fog?
Lots.
All right, then. It's not the weather which makes us so attractive. Is it maybe our wine, women, and song? Let's ask the experts. You there, you expert on women.
American women are beautiful, certainly. But we've never produced any classic or historic beauty. We have no legendary figure to compare with Helen of Troy, or with any of the Greek or Roman Venuses, or with Egypt's Cleopatra. As far as fiction is concerned, we can offer nobody to stand up against Italy's Juliet, or Germany's Isolde, or France's Roxanne. Certainly not Scarlett O'Hara.
Certainly not.
No, indeed.
All right, that's fine, Doc. Thanks very much. Now, what about our wines? Is that what makes America so attractive from the outside looking in? How about it, wine expert?
American wines are excellent. But then, of course, meaning no offense, have you ever heard of French champagne, of Burgundy, or Liebfraumilch?
Okay. Can it be our song, maestro?
America can well be proud of its composers and of its wealth of folk music. But the fact of the matter is that we Americans have yet to produce a single world great symphony. Whereas Finland has produced 7, Germany and Austria 50, the Russians about 12, the French 2 or 3, England 2 or 3, Bohemia...
Not song, then. Neither wine, women, nor song. So what is it, then? Well, it's this, when you come right down to it. It's the spectacle of nearly 150 million people trying to live up to the expectations of a handful of great men who lived and died 250 years ago. Men who were so fed up with the kind of government they'd been getting, they sat down and wrote a new constitution for themselves and their children. A democratic constitution that's never been topped before or since. Unfortunately, we don't always live up to that document. There's some people who'd like to stiff-arm the Constitution right out of the books. Others who deliberately twist it and turn it until it means something quite different than what Franklin and Jefferson meant it to mean. Like the devil quoting the scriptures to his own purpose. There's intolerance and bigotry in certain places, and a lot of things there shouldn't be. But we 150 million people, by and large, are still trying to live by the rules. The best rules we've seen around in a long time, or are likely to see in a long time. Of course, there are other things that make our union a good one to belong to. It's a beautiful country, even though it has a lot of incorrigible bad lands and incorrigible slums. Ain't many countries you find have as much in them to look at and wonder about as this one. This can be a kind of a fierce country, too. You ever see the way its mountains frown down sometimes? You know what they're frowning at? Some rumors they heard about petty intrigue, about political bosses and shysters and fakers and grafters and guys who make a business of gypping the people. Ever see the way the skies suddenly get black? The thunder roars and the lightning starts throwing itself around. That's the restless spirit of the country saying what there is to say about a lynching. Ever see a storm whooping it up across the Great Lakes? That's how the American winds feel about anybody who denies anybody else a fair trial or free speech or the right to assemble or the right to worship as one sees fit. Thank you. then, in the final analysis, there can be no analysis. Many great thinkers and poets have attempted it, but the country is too big for any one man. There's Walt Whitman and Carl Sandburg and Tom Wolfe. And they all felt the magnitude and magnificence of the nation that got put together piece by piece like a jigsaw puzzle. They felt it and wrote about it in unforgettable ways. But still, it's bigger than any of them or any of us. Whitman hit it on the nose when he said it was bigger than the president and his cabinet in the District of Columbia. It's not Park Avenue or Broadway or 42nd Street or the Loop or the Golden Triangle. It's other things. Many, many, many other things.
Swimming holes.
Gas stations.
Strollers on Main Street.
Tourist houses on the edge of town along the state highway.
Sunday papers.
Season tickets to concerts.
Auctioneers.
Night courts.
Radios, parades, toothpaste, shaving cream, dogs, cats, skyscrapers, subways.
Oh, we could go on for weeks with this and never come any closer to a working definition of America or to any real understanding of its total meaning. Look, how can you add up all the red and yellow neon signs? The smell of all the eggs and bacon frying in the morning. The bargain specials, the lessons learned, the cows let in from pasture, the mileage clocked up on automobile speedometers, the rainfall and the snowfall and the wind drift. It's much too big for you or me or any of us who happen to stand alone or in small cliques. It's much too great for any person or any party. Too much loved by all its people, loved in spite of and because of its faults and virtues, its past mistakes and future promises. America's not a map, a poem, a post of legionnaires, an almanac, a mural, a building in the heart of Washington. It's a territory, possessed by people, possessed by an ideal. Well, that's all, listeners. Just wanted to talk between Americans for a half hour of a warm summer Sunday. No big finish here, no brass section bringing down the curtain. Just a little music to separate me from the announcer who follows with a closing announcement. Good night, Americans.
You have been listening to Between Americans, an informal essay for informal listeners, written and directed by Norman Corwin as the 10th in the Columbia Workshop Cycle 26 by Corwin. The principal narrator was Ray Collins, and the original musical score was composed and conducted by Alexander Semler. His overture, The Columbia Workshop and A Quiet Night, was given its first performance on this program. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
WBNS Columbus.